like to invite you to sit back and relax and invite you to the topic of this evening's conversation. And as Donna so beautifully mentioned, I've entitled our focus today, The Soul's View of Life. The Soul's View of Life. How life views, how the soul views life and what it means for you and me. And I focused on this because all of us, every one of us, no matter how exquisitely healthy or whole or bright or enlightened we are, we don't always access this mysterious thing called life through the truly sacred eyes of the soul. Certainly not every minute of every day. Instead, we often look at life, our lives, life circumstances and events, even what we call life itself, through the eyes of our more trained dualistic mind, or, if you will, through the eyes of the television news people, or just through the subconscious assumptions of our cultural traditions or our family's traditions, or through the eyes of other people who are profound influences on us. And it's just plain easy to miss our soul's unique perspective. It's even convenient, I think, to forget how our own truth, our inner soulful truth, invites and calls us to be in relation to whatever is happening around us. So, tonight, we have what I really feel is like a glorious privilege of sitting for this precious hour together right in the cozy lap of our endless soul, resting, if you will, in the inner womb of our deepest, truest self, and its loving, warm embrace. And that's what I'm inviting us to right now, just to hang out in the soft living room and feel the warm flames of the fire of our soul as they just touch the fabric of our skin and just let us feel embraced clear through. Tonight, we open ourselves, we open our minds and our hearts, for example, to our soul's unique sacred vision, to how that indwelling divinity that we call our soul looks out at this thing called life, how that infinite vision that lives right in the middle of us perceives and interprets the very same life that we're looking at the same time through many other lenses. And as we all know, each one of us, each person's soul perceives and interprets this thing called life in a totally unique way. None of us is like the other, not only in our personalities, but also in our soul and in our soul's vision. So our soul's vision is different. And even more, our souls, I think, invite each of us to life in a special and quite personalized way. So you not only perceive life in a unique way and interpret it in a specialized way, you also feel about it in your own unique manner. You feel related to it in a way that nobody else does. You feel invited to participate in it in your own customized way. So as always, please take my words this evening and personalize them to your own soul's design and style. That way you'll get maximum benefit out of our precious time together. So, what then is your soul's view of life? Or, let me say it differently, when your divine self or God self, and that's just other words for soul, if you will, when your God self looks out at this thing called life, what does it see? How does it see it? What does that life look like through those precious eyes of your soul? Well, I'd like to share with you a vision just right off the bat that my soul has when my soul looks out at life. It's actually perhaps maybe not even my vision per se. It's maybe more a vision that I sense the very soul of life has. So as I hang out in the soul of life, as life itself perceives itself, experiences itself, lives itself, this is what I see. So the vision goes something like this. Well, let me make it even more personal for us in a sense. How about if you picture yourself right now as the soul of life, the very soul of life, life itself, maybe even envision yourself as life itself, having an experience of itself. And if you'd like this in a little bit more personalized form, you could even perceive yourself as God looking out at creation. So in this context and spirit, What do you see? So, back to what I was saying, if I consider myself the soul of life, of the divine creator, here's what I see. I see a world, a world that reflects myself, life, the divine, that reflects my glorious nature, the nature of God, that illuminates my magnificent beauty, that expresses my astonishing light, that glorifies my breathtaking wonder, that radiates endlessly my expansive vastness, that inhales and exhales with me my loving heart, that amplifies my creative power, that feels my warm, gentle, but amazing radiance. So if I'm God or life, looking at this phenomenon called creation, literally I have no choice but to perceive myself in every element and detail of that creation, in every bit of sparkly stardust, in every planet's unique makeup, in every star's fiery, generative expelling of light, in every plant and animal on this planet, in every human being's heart, in every thought and feeling in your mind and in your psyche, in every leaf, every tree, every mountain, in every movement of the sea, on the surface and below, in every cell of your body and my body. Yes, if I'm God, or the soul of life, noticing what I've cleverly and ingeniously created, I see only unparalleled beauty. I see infinite warmth. I see endless love. I see creativity's absolute dynamism. I see power that never ends. I see gorgeous wonder everywhere around me. If I'm looking at what we call the world through the eyes of the divine, especially as that divine is an intimate part of me, like what we refer to as our soul, I have only one option, and that is to be in awe of everything I see, to be overwhelmed by the beauty of it all, to experience what I see as wonder personified, even to celebrate this thing called life as the most amazing creation I could imagine. You know, as I was thinking about that this afternoon, I recalled a poem I wrote called What a Sight. I think it was a poem I wrote probably a year ago, maybe the first poem I've written. And I think just a couple of stanzas of that say it well. Through the eyes of the soul, I see what a sight. What a sight this swirling, twirling earth is, swishing and swaying through our supple, spacious universe, rhythmically traversing the elastic heavenly bodies, yet claiming its own special space, choosing its own robust role, expressing its own bounteous beauty. What a sight this glorious globe is, this spinning ball of enriching energy, of vigorous vitality, as it infuses the wild, wacky wonder of life's endless eternity into the waiting arms of every creature living on its tender skin. This glorious view of life, I deeply, deeply believe, is how our souls, your soul, my soul, see what we call reality. When we, you and I, with our well-trained mind, look out at the world, we can often see pain and suffering. But our souls literally look at the very same thing, and we see amazingly endless beauty. We see creative possibility. When our dualistic thinking ponders thoughts of good and evil, healthy, unhealthy, positive, negative, what does our expansive soul think? Our expansive soul thinks thoughts of creative balance and magical blending. When you and I might experience pain or suffering from some event, our visionary souls experience the very beauty of creation that's inherent in that event. And when a purely human interpretation of life says, for example, that life sucks, that's the technical terminology, our soulful interpretation says, wow, life is a glorious mystery, now expressing creative possibilities and expressions that the mind has not yet learned to comprehend. You know, I find it most remarkable that way down deep in the precious psyche of each and every human being, there rests this amazing phenomenon called a soul. And to me, that soul that lives at the core of us is like an over the forest, outside the box, visionary aspect of ourselves that can literally see everything, exactly the way God does. I don't know about you, but to me, this utterly amazing, that inside you and me, the very vision of the divine, the utter wonder of life, the powerful source of creation lives. To me, it's amazing that it lives, that it perceives, that it expresses, that it speaks to each and every one of us every moment of every day, not just from some space out there, but from this centerpiece of our own being. And you know, I've often wondered this thought. I don't know if I've ever expressed it. What would happen, or what would it be like if each one of us here had but one single project in our lives? And the project I'm talking about is the project of attuning to our soul's presence, of listening to our soul's quiet inner voice, of learning how to perceive life through the eyes of this amazing soul, of becoming as unified with our soul's life force as is humanly possible. This question reminds me actually of a short quote that I went back and looked up. It's a quote by Saul Bellow, a recently deceased, I think he died in 2005 maybe, American Nobel Prize for Literature winning novelist. And he wrote these words: "Even in the greatest confusion, there is still an open channel to the soul. It may be difficult to find, but the channel is always there. Always there, and it is our business to keep it open, to have access to this deepest part of ourselves." I don't know why, I love that quote. It just says that no matter what kind of mire we might be feeling absorbed in and sinking into, that voice of the soul, presence of the soul, guidance of the soul, that beauty of the soul, that wonder of life that lives in us is right there as a dependable center. So let me ask the question another way. What would be the effect in your life, for your life, if you challenge yourself every day to look at every situation, every circumstance, every event through the purely knowing eyes of your visionary soul? Or let me say it another way. What would your life feel like to you if you required of yourself even that you interpret every event in your life through your soul's vast reservoir of clear perception, clear truth? Or to ask it one more way, how would you feel about your life if, side by side with every other thought or negative judgment you might have, you held your soul's perspective, your soul's vision in an equal light, in equal proportion, then perhaps looked at them both and let yourself be drawn to the one that just felt more true to you, more important to you? To repeat the question, what would happen if you made this, attuning to your soul, uniting with your soul, your life's project? Or come to think of it, since we're coming up on the new year, if you made it your New Year's resolution for 2010, specializing in it just for one whole year. You know, like that guy on television who ate only at, I think it was Subway for a 1 year, just to see what the effect on his body would be. Or let's look at it this way. If a year is too much, how about a month or a week or a day or an hour or a few minutes? Whatever works in the practical fixings of your life, if you will. The point and the question, of course, is what difference might it make, no matter how you would go about it? So I'd like to take this point about connecting with our souls just one more step and say this: what if we literally not only attuned to our souls, connected to our souls, listened to our souls, what if we literally became our souls? What would life look like if our very identity, our deepest sense of who we are, gradually, or maybe not so gradually, moved, shifted from that of our human personality to that of our soulful self. If we became less identified with our human persona and more identified with our wise, all-knowing, all-amazing soul, if we truly felt like a soulful presence having a human experience more than feeling like a human being learning to have a spiritual experience, what might we experience once our basic identity, sense of who we are, our basic identity begins to look first and foremost to our soul's wide perspective before looking to our mind's more narrow interpretation? Or what would you do differently, do you think, if your conscious mind's main job was no longer to be in charge of problem solving or solution finding, but your mind's main job became to translate, just be a translator of your soul's vision, your soul's wisdom, your soul's clear knowing into practical, tangible applications for your life? In other words, if your mind became that middleman, middle person, between the wonder of your soul's vision and the application into your life. So in the spirit of these questions, I'd like to read another short quote by a modern inspirational speaker and author, actually, by the name of Victoria Moran, who in her book entitled Lit From Within, L-I-T, Lit From Within, she wrote these words: "Once you do a trial run of living your life based on a belief in oneness instead of a belief in separateness, nothing will ever be the same." I'd like to repeat that. Once you do a trial run of living your life based on a belief in oneness instead of a belief in separateness, nothing will ever be the same. Well, it's in that same spirit of these questions that I'd like to share with you some thoughts about what difference your soul's vision might make in your life as you become more and more aware of it, more and more one with it, more and more identified in it, as you become your soul, as you become the soulful you. And in short, I would like to express three significant differences that this could make in your life. And I recognize that there are not only three, but multiply that by itself. There are 9, multiply that by itself. There are 81, multiply that by itself. There are a gazillion differences. Hey, you thought I was going to do the math, didn't you? The gazillion differences in your life just by being soulful. First and foremost, I think you would become awestruck, literally taken over by feelings of awe and inspiration. Why? Because everything you look at can now be experienced as filled with creation's wonder, filled with limitless creativity. Yes, I think you would marvel at the utter inventiveness of it all, no matter what it might look like through a dualistic mind. And once you got past all of your historical thoughts that perhaps result in unhappy judgment, and once you got past those prized values that somehow wind up separating us from what's in front of us, once you got past that is, once you're seeing what's on your plate through your soul's sparkling clear eyes, the view quickly changes, and you're absolutely awestruck at the complete wonder, the utter amazingness, the absolute divine glory of what you're witnessing. A second effect, number two, a second effect of looking through your soul's visionary eyes is a keen understanding. An understanding of why whatever's taking shape before your very eyes is happening. An understanding of its deeper meanings, its significances. An understanding of the importance of that circumstance or event in the dynamic act of the creation of which it's a part. An understanding of the wisdom that's inherent in this perhaps puzzling process. A meaningful discovery of, if you will, the proverbial pony in the seeming manure. A deeper grasp of the creative genius behind the creation of whatever's happening in this moment, no matter what it looks through dualistic eyes. And because of this deeper, fuller understanding, you and I begin to get it. To get it, as they say, to get the whys and the whats, the hows and the wherefores of any and every circumstance event in our lives. And we can never, ever again look at them as just a problem. You just start knowing that creation is occurring in whatever's on your plate. That creation has a rhythm and a resonance that somehow begins to make sense. That what's being created is the product of a relentless wisdom in and through the circumstance. A wisdom that has your benefit, my benefit, in mind. And the benefit of the other person that you may be perceiving as a persecutor or a victim. And that if you go with the spirit of that creation, you'll find that pony. You'll discover that wisdom and ultimately be more fully blessed than ever just because you let understanding be your guide. And let's look at a third practical effect of seeing life through the all-knowing, all-wise eyes of your soul. It's this: you begin to experience life not so much as a dualistic pull and tug experience between two opposites, but more and more as a unified experience, as a win-win, as an expression of grace and love in action. You know, it's interesting to me in this regard that any two people can view the exact same phenomenon, and as we all know, there's lots of research that demonstrates this, one viewing it through the eyes of the soul and the other through the eyes of duality. And those two people wind up seeing very, very different things. For example, if both of these theoretical observers were looking at, let's say, an ongoing argument between a couple or between two different cultures, one of them might see it as a power struggle or a duel of hatred, and the other might see the exact same thing as perhaps a genuine, even though pained, attempt on the part of both the arguers to find the other person's heart, to find common ground, to discover their unified connection. And I remember when September 11th, 2001 happened. The American president at the time saw it as a contemptible attempt of evil to overcome good. That was a perception. A neighbor of mine declared it quite emphatically, verbally, as an act of, as I recall, brutal hatred that needed to be avenged in kind. And a former military friend of mine, whom I spent some time with afterwards, saw it as a hostile act of a power-hungry mob. And interestingly, he expressed a deeply felt desire to re-enlist so that he could kill them all in revenge. And every one of them were emotionally upset. Every one of these people I've just described felt personally attacked, not just as witnessers of an attack. And they were viewing the event mostly through those very traditional eyes of dualistic perception. And as we all know, that's totally, totally understandable. For me, just to offer a bit of contrast, I saw it as a desperate way of a people who felt abused and neglected, trying desperately to be heard. I saw it as a misguided attempt, but an attempt nonetheless, for them to be loved. As a power-propelled way of living out their need to be equals, to be recognized as perhaps deserving partners in an evolving world that they perceived was ignoring them and was turning against them, and choosing a destructive way of expressing those needs. You know what, though? I also saw it through my own soul's eyes as an invitation by and from the very souls of both sides. An invitation for us to respond, not necessarily in kind, like with wars and invasions, for example, but with a blend of enhanced, powerful self-protection on the one hand, so we're taking really good care of ourselves, and a gesture, and I don't know how much of a stretch this is for you, probably not for most of you, a gesture of understanding-based dialogue on the other, where we reach out and invite conversation, communication, both globally as well as with the offenders. In other words, I heard a soulful invitation, the soul's invitation to create a new worldwide dialogue among all nations and peoples on our planet at this very pregnant moment of possibility, and maybe for us all to come together and co-create or co-invent new innovative approaches to peaceful coexistence that maybe hadn't even been thought of until that time, and through that ritual to create an even more cohesive human family. And that cohesive family in turn could reach out and embrace to every disenfranchised feeling person or group and help. And I'm not saying that this vision that I've just shared is the vision or the invitation of the soul. I'm simply saying it's how my soul spoke to me at the time of that precious need and that human hurt. And your soul perhaps spoke to you differently. And you know what? I'm sure your soul spoke to you equally wisely, equally broadly, equally creatively, and in a way that invited you to the wonder and the possibility of that, if you will, pregnantly sacred moment. That said, and on the footsteps of these three differences that soulful vision can make in your life, the difference, for example, the difference of being awestruck, and I knew I would remember it, the difference of being awestruck, the difference of having a deep, keen understanding, and then, of course, the difference that we're just talking about, which is the difference of moving more into this being taken over by our soul with feelings of absolute oneness. So, on the footsteps of these three differences, and before we stop, I'd like to share with you a personal experience. It's an experience that just jumped into my mind. I hadn't really thought of it for quite a while. Jumped into my mind this afternoon as I was sitting here opening to what to share. It's an experience of soulful vision, my own soulful vision, and the difference it made in my life, and maybe in your lives. Again, it was in the year 2001, and I had been officially retired for over 2 years at that point. And it was, frankly, a perfectly peace-filled, happy time. I was sitting in my own little nirvanic cave every day, feeling totally one with all life, and frankly, quite thrilled to be no longer in service to a suffering humanity. I had a sense that a big change in my life was imminent, but the last thought in my limited creative mind was that I'd be back helping people with their deeply propelled processes of change. And suddenly, at that time, I heard from my depths a voice that carried an intense tone of authority. Sure enough, it was the voice of my soul telling me quite emphatically that it was now time for me to enter back into the world. Now time for me to begin serving people in a more engaged way, no longer from my cave, and now to become the voice of their souls, to help their souls speak to them more meaningfully, more directly, more lovingly, more empoweringly, helping them become more soulful in their lives. Well, I heard that voice quite clearly. It was loud and clear, and I felt its authoritative directive strongly. But you know what? I heard equally the voice of my complacent, peace-filled mind. The very mind that by that time had settled beautifully into its own precious state of being. The very mind that had become, at that point, totally delighted to not be engaged any longer in dualities back and forth, dialogues and debates. The very mind that lived in my head and in my space, that had felt itself totally done with dealing with people's dualistic battles and painful processes. Well, to put it plainly, that mind went into a major protest. It let me know quite fully that after many decades of loving service to me and to thousands of people, it was done, it loved being done, it intended to stay done, done with humanity's unresolved stuff, its ongoing pain, its genuine but messy needs. In short, my mind said not only no, but hell no, forget it. I'm choosing to not play. I'll stay sitting here on the bench. I'll stay lying on my blanket on the beach, soaking up the peaceful rays of the inner sun. And you know what? I don't intend to be disturbed. And I think its final words were something like, good luck, buddy. So there I was, hearing both voices loud and clear, both equally emphatic, both not relenting. And of course, by this time, it's probably obvious you have no question or confusion about which direction I chose, or should I say, which direction chose me, do you? But the point I want to make is this. At that time, my mind could only see my soul's invitation to return to service as an invitation to return to pain, as an invitation to leave inner peace behind and get back into life's trenches, into the front ranks of the battle and fight the proverbial human fight. My precious mind, sitting there in total personal peace, couldn't see the soul's wisdom, couldn't find the soul's larger vision, couldn't ponder the soul's bigger plan, all because this itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny little mind had found a delightful comfort zone, a being-filled spot in the sunny land of endless nirvana, and could only think in terms of protecting that sacred safe haven from, if you will, the evil invader called the soul. Just like we Americans felt like protecting our safe haven on September 11th, 2001, by fighting off those evil invaders. Rather than seeing a bigger plan, a golden opportunity, a new possibility. Well, obviously, I chose my soul's directive. And let's face it, it really chose me. On the one hand, I had no choice. On the other hand, I knew instinctively that in that act of embrace, in that embrace of this unclear but wise direction from my soul, a whole new life with untold possibilities, with immeasurable opportunities for, again, thousands of people who were just waiting for that choice to be made, could happen. And thus, you and I found each other. You and I have danced the magical dance of your soul. We've sung your soul's inspired and inspiring song. We've chanted your soul's sacred, transforming music. We've listened together to your soul's penetrating wisdom. We've hung out in your soul's undying and pure truth. We've felt your soul's undying and enduring love. We've been empowered together by your soul's creative fire. And you know, together, you and I, we've found a life that looks more perfect, feels more fulfilling, seems much more user-friendly, can now be experienced as more loving, be celebrated by us more naturally, and is literally more amazing, more awe-inspiring, more wondrous than we all could ever have imagined, just because one person said yes. In short, I think my soul's plan was perfect. Perfect for me, perfect for you, and perfect for the whole world. And may I be so bold as to say with some oomph and gusto that your soul's wisdom is equally and always perfect for you, in service of you, in service of others, and in service perfectly of our entire world. It's every inner whisper. It's profound, wisdom-filled advice. It's adventure-filled direction. It's powerful, commanding voice. Serve you every moment of every day, so beautifully and so perfectly, and serve me and serve those around you. And again, serve and bless the whole world. If I may say it again, how blessed we are, you and I, to have that godly source of intelligence, of love, of creative juice living so wondrously, so dynamically at and in our core. And not just in our core, but as our core, as us, as our central operating system, as the wise hub of the wheel and spokes of our life, as our heart, as our heart. That's what our soul is. And in closing, may I take the liberty of praising you for being the soulful splendor of life that you are. May I honor you this Thanksgiving for being the embodiment of the most splendid creation imaginable. And may I bless you as a soul driven, soul empowered, soul loved, soul filled wonder that you indeed are. Thank you. Thank you for being the most awesome, beautiful, and sensational version of life that you and I could ever experience. Thank you for being you. And the wonder-filled eyes of your soul are your guide, your path, your escort, your window, your identity, your openness to the very magnificence and infinity of your being. And in closing, it's as the voice of your soul's trustable vision that I utter this final, soulful, 10-sentence message to you. And this is your soul speaking to you. I saw you before you were born, and you were wondrous. I witnessed you at the precious moment of your human birth, and you were wondrous. I experienced you at every faltering step along your human path, and you were wondrous. I loved you every time you fell and got hurt, and found you wondrous. I found you at your deepest moments of personal despair, and found you wondrous. I have guided and nurtured you every moment of your life, and found you wondrous. I look at you now and find you wondrous. I live within your depths, fill you from your breadth, and speak to you from your heights, and I find you wondrous. I love you, honor you, and celebrate you as perfect because you are wondrous. I am you, the real you, the wondrous you, and I find you wondrous. Thank you so very, very, very much.